This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Yesterday, the federal prison in Butner announced three more inmates died over the weekend of COVID-19. We're continuing our coverage of detention and disease in North Carolina today. Law enforcement agencies are changing their priorities and strategies, partially to protect officers from the coronavirus, but also to prevent further overcrowding in North Carolina's prisons. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, claims it's following suit. ICE says it is decreasing the populations at its facilities by bringing in fewer people and letting out more. So why are detainees still protesting conditions? Joining me to share her reporting on ICE detention facilities is Melissa Boughton. She's courts, law, and democracy reporter for the left-leaning NC Policy Watch. Hello, Melissa.
Hi. Thank you for having me on.
Good to have you. And before we begin, I'd like to note that we reached out to both ICE and CoreCivic, the private company managing the regional detention center that we're going to be talking about. CoreCivic declined, and we received no response from ICE. But Melissa, you've done a lot of reporting, and you've talked to representatives from those places. And first, I want to talk about the outbreak and how it's being managed at the Butner Federal Prison Complex. What do you know about that?
So I know that they're working on trying to release some, they're similar to DPS in the, at the state level. They are working on reviewing inmates for release. But right now it appears that they're just trying to contain what has been a rapidly spreading virus.
Do we know how rapidly and what the latest figures are from Butner?
We do. So the first case was reported there, I believe, on March 27th, and that was with a staffer. And now, as of yesterday afternoon, there have been reports of 58 inmates who are infected and 26 staffers who've tested positive for the virus.
Any deaths?
There's been a total of 4 deaths, and those are ranging people who are ranging in age from 46 to 81.
All right. And now we'll talk a little bit about state prisons, because at a news conference yesterday, Governor Cooper announced that the overcrowded state prison system is considering the release of 500 inmates. Now, what does that mean in terms of the total population in state prisons in this state, Melissa?
So it's actually a very small number. And so, you know, advocates and experts have applauded DPS for getting a head start, but you know, they've also pointed out that state prisons currently operate at 8% over capacity. So just to get back to providing minimal protection for incarcerated people and correctional staff, DPS would actually need to release at least 2,647 individuals from custody.
And that's to get back to normal operating conditions. And of course, we know under these circumstances, you need even extraordinary conditions and steps to take to protect inmates and staff. So last week we heard from sheriff's department saying that officers were issuing more citations rather than arrests, and that's of course to ease the load on prisons. How about immigration enforcement priorities? What do we know about those strategies? Have they changed?
So yes, immigration did announce that they have scaled back their enforcement activity. They're focused right now on targeting individuals who they deem pose a very serious public safety threat. So an ICE spokesman that I talked to yesterday said that an example of that would be targeting someone who has an aggravated felony charge, such as murder. And so that's what they're focusing on right now.
Do we know much about the conditions at ICE facilities around the country? Well, let's take a look at Lumpkin, Georgia, which is where those who are sent from North Carolina end up.
Sure. So we do know some about the conditions. They've reportedly been less than sanitary, and they deal, you know, just like many jails and prisons, with a lot of overcrowding. So in one open pod, as they call it, at Stewart, you're looking at about 62 ICE detainees who are sleeping on rows of bunk beds, and they share about 3 toilets. You know, they have soap, but they're, you know, there are other concerns that detainees have come forward with, and what they've been protesting.
Now, we know it's difficult to get information out of those facilities, but what are we hearing about the way detainees are responding to this? We understand there's a great deal of unrest.
Yes. So we've heard a lot about hunger strikes. We'd heard about one particular hunger strike at Stewart, but ICE has denied that that's happened. And they've clarified that what they consider to be a hunger strike is ICE detainees who miss more than 9 consecutive meals. But we've heard about hunger strikes being the general response from detainees across many detention centers across the nation.
Well, we spoke to a North Carolina resident who was released on bond from the Stewart Detention Center in Lumpkin, Georgia, earlier this month, and he agreed to speak with us anonymously to avoid repercussions in his deportation hearings. Let's listen.
Estaban mandando a la gente según que ya se iban, pero las regresaban otra vez porque los aeropuertos estaban cerrados, supuestamente.
We thought and decided to go on a strike because the people they were taking out were just getting thrown right back in because the airports were supposedly closed.
Y pensaron todos en hacer una huelga, pero creo que se dieron cuenta los encargados de ahí y ya después ya no los mandaban junto a todos, sino sacaban bloque por bloque para evitar eso que hiciéramos la huelga.
And we were all thinking of going on strike, but I think the people in charge caught on. And after that, they didn't let us all out at once. They brought us out block by block to avoid us striking.
Well, that was a North Carolina resident released from the Stewart Detention Facility in Georgia nearly 2 weeks ago who agreed to speak with us anonymously. I'm talking with reporter Melissa Boughton. Melissa, talk about what the folks at Stewart Detention Center are saying about, because I think now that facility counts 6 confirmed cases among detainees. That was the latest I saw. How are they saying that they're containing the outbreak?
So they have reported to be isolating individuals who they deem are high risk. And what they do is they include medical staff in the intake process to determine who would be high risk for contracting the virus or having complications from it. And they detain them in groups, also in a dorm-like setting. They've also reportedly encouraged staff to social distance when they can and have said that they would provide masks to all staff and those in their care. It's hard to determine whether or not that's happening, but that is what CoreCivic says that they're doing at Stewart.
Well, in our conversation with the North Carolina resident detained at Stewart, he spoke with us about the difficulties of maintaining hygiene.
Hay como 4 regaderas ahí todas juntas, pues, y ahí se van a bañar. Dan un jabón ellos una vez por semana, pero.
There are 4 showerheads there all together. That's where we'd go to bathe. They offered a bar of soap once a week, but.
That was a North Carolina resident formerly detained at the Stewart Detention Center who spoke with us anonymously because of a pending deportation hearing. I'm speaking with Melissa Boughton, a reporter who is looking into all of this. Part of the public health concern, of course, in detention has to do with detainees moving from local jails to centralized detention facilities. Former detainees we heard from passed through 2 jails before being transferred to Stewart. Now, ICE claims they've decreased their intake, Melissa, by 60% compared to this time last year. What do we know about whether that's affecting and how that might be affecting immigrants currently in the jail system?
So we know that inmates currently in the jail system, you know, anyone coming in or out, any less bodies that are moving is a good thing, according to public health officials, because it's less people who have the potential to either carry the virus in with them or carry it out with them back into the public. We know, like, Alamance County Detention Center in North Carolina is a place where ICE detainees are held temporarily until they get to another facility. They have not reported any COVID-19 cases as of yesterday, and they're taking similar steps there to try to prevent the spread.
Now, this reporting is also, part of the story because this is an opaque process in an opaque system, and I wonder about reliable information about safety precautions and the spread of the virus reaching detainees in custody and in the prison system. How does this affect the overall system, the fact that people aren't really sure about the quality of the information they're receiving?
I think it just goes to, you know, it adds to a level of, you know, public distrust. If information had been disseminated, you know, over time that could be verified, it would add to the public trust. And right now, loved ones, you know, they just want to know what's happening with their family members or friends. And, you know, because there has been this established mistrust, you know, that's kind of fueling this uncertainty with everyone.
Well, Melissa, I know you have talked to the officials at ICE and detention centers around the country, as well as sheriff's offices here. I should note that we also reached out to both ICE and CoreCivic, the private company that manages the regional detention center. CoreCivic declined our invitation, and we received no response from ICE. Melissa Boughton, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me on.
Melissa Boughton is courts and law and democracy reporter for the left-leaning NC Policy Watch. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org.